Exceptionalism for Americans is the belief that the United States is, in some way, more open, more vigorous, more optimistic than other nations are.
During his travels in 1831, French writer Alexis de Tocqueville observed that America was an exceptional nation with a special role to play in human history.
He saw in the United States a culture arising out of limited government that was unlike anything he had ever seen.
In another word for unique is exceptional.
Whereas revolution led to anarchy in France, the American Revolution produced a unique culture of freedom and opportunity.
American exceptionalism has been at the center of our nation's experience for nearly 400 years. What makes America unique? Politically, culturally, in science and industry.
What is the source of our country's blessing? And have many of us forgotten why America is an exceptional nation?
I believe that God put this land between the two great oceans to be found by special people from every corner of the world.
What we hear in Ronald Reagan's speech when he's talking about a city on a hill, he's saying that we've returned to who we really are as Americans. We have always believed that we can be a beacon for the rest of the world.
Our belief in American exceptionalism has historically been bipartisan. However, there are signs that this is no longer so.
We're at battle, quite frankly, between two competing values, the American system and the European socialistic system.
What then can we do? And how can we strengthen American exceptionalism to have a new birth of freedom and prosperity?
America has historically been committed to building a better future. Again and again, the American people have demonstrated a remarkable ability to choose wisely when faced with great challenges.
Our best leaders have reminded us that we have a moral obligation to the cause of freedom, and that the cause of freedom is the cause of all mankind.
American exceptionalism is really a great term, and it is something that is very special to us. And by the way, we have to be very, very careful to protect it and cherish it, because it can also disappear.
Will this latest generation, as Abraham Lincoln so famously said, will this latest generation hand that torch of liberty to the next generation? That is our charge today.
Exceptionalism, just as I suspect that the Brits believe in British exceptionalism and the Greeks believe in Greek exceptionalism.
But overwhelmingly, for the American people, this is a liberation. This is life, healthy life, liberty, the freedom to pursue your happiness, which could be follow your passion for good rather than follow your be constrained by your policy. It's about wellness, it's about prevention, it's about a healthier America.
It's not reducing the deficit so far.
Well, it is because by any measure you see that the cost of health health care in our country is, as the rate of increase has greatly reduced.
Right, but we're still increasing.
But we're on the right path. And the bill isn't implemented yet. The bill isn't implemented yet. So when it is implemented, which will be
very exciting. But we have to pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it.
It wasn't in the scope of the subpoena that whatever his name is, ISA, was putting forth, did not include that email. A FOIA is a different story. So you can't say what you put out under subpoena, FOIA you should have done under his subpoena. Well, that's not what a subpoena encompassed. And it isn't that different from what else was out there. And if you all want to sit around and talk about Benghazi, you can sit around and talk about Benghazi. But the fact is, that's a subterfuge.
People could have known that within days, and they didn't know that.
With all due respect, the fact is, we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make? It is our job to figure out what happened and do everything we can to prevent it from ever happening again, Senator. Now, honestly, I will do my best to answer your questions about this.
We've got
a
perfect storm brewing now. You know that. We are not at our best at this moment. We have turned into a mincing, politically correct leviathan, and our enemies are truly primitives. I have a friend who's a realtor in Tehran at an organization called Century 4, and he... he told me the only reason we're not all decapitated is because we've got our heads up our asses. And we have for around 30 years now, starting with Jimmy Carter, who pushed us down this road. And the rest of the roster over there is looking pretty shaky, too. Joe Biden, sometimes he's so off the rails, I can't tell if he's crazy or I actually like him. All I know is that when somebody was putting those hair plugs in, corkscrewing them into the front of his head, they severed a discernment lobe because this guy has no parking brake. Barney Frank, huh? Well, here's a cute story. You know, when Barney's boyfriend ran the male prostitution service out of his condominium way back when you called in to procure services from the boyfriend, the code you had to use over the phone, people were listening, to tell them whether or not you were submissive or dominant, was in fact Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. Is that unbelievable? And that brings us to my personal favorite, Cruella Demented. The great Nancy Pelosi. The whistle on that train of thought, barely audible off in the distance. You know, the best nickname for her is a caller to my Westwood One radio show called in, and her name is Ann, Ruth Ann from North Carolina. I wanted to get the name right because it was so brilliant that I have to share it with you. She thinks that Pelosi is a Bond villain, and she calls her Pelosi Galore. Perfect. Oh, Ruthie, I wish I'd thought of that doll, but what is it that bugs me about Pelosi? She always looks like she's perpetually witnessing the docking of the Hindenburg in Lake Michigan. She always looks like she's pulling 7 G's in a wind tunnel test or something. Can you believe she was actually the Speaker of the House of Representatives? It's unbelievable. Every time she opens her mouth, I shake my head so rapidly you could blend paint colors in my mouth. I'm going to miss her once a year at the State of the Union. That was my favorite night when she'd sit there over the president's shoulder. Have you ever seen anybody put that much thought into doing absolutely nothing? She would sit there alternatingly blinking like the Yul Brynner robot on a rainy day at Westworld, and then she'd go dead-eye like the shark eating Robert Shaw in Jaws. And then she'd hit the power on the twitch rate again, go back up. What is that twitch rate? It makes a hummingbird's wings look positively glacial. Did you hear her opening statement at the Obamacare summit? She sounded like Professor Irwin Corey explaining the infield fly rule in Farsi while under the influence of an amyl nitrate ampule. Nancy Pelosi is thicker than a Charlie Sheen prenup. And she is crazy, batshit crazy. I guarantee you that woman sleeps upside down.
Unfortunately, we have three or four dozen Republicans in the House who are Cruz Republicans who basically threatened to bring the House down if John Boehner did not pursue this policy. John knew it was not going to work, but he probably had no choice. I understand his position. But I'm really more concerned about why more Republicans around the country didn't join me in denouncing Ted Cruz. I mean, now we have people who are on the sidelines who are coming forward, but we have to take a stand here. We cannot allow our party to be taken over by the likes of Ted Cruz and Rand Paul. I mean, these are people who are isolationists. I consider them rhinos.
Means, as far as the Tea Party and others are concerned, it's anybody to the left of Ted Cruz is a rhino, a Republican in name only, which, as I say, is an insult. But you know what? The real rhinos are the people in the Tea Party and on the hard right, because they have made it clear over and over again that their allegiance is not to the Republican.
And this budget agreement takes giant steps in the right direction. It's not everything I wanted. But when groups come out and criticize an agreement that they've never seen, you begin to wonder just how credible those actions are. And so yesterday when the criticism was coming, frankly, I thought it was my job and my obligation to stand up for conservatives here in the Congress who want more deficit reduction, stand up for the work that Chairman Ryan did. He did good work on behalf of the American people. Again, it's not everything we wanted, but our job is to find enough common ground to move the ball down the field on behalf of the American people who sent us here to do their work. Frankly, I think they're misleading their followers. I think they're pushing our members in places where they don't want to be. And frankly, I just think that they've lost all credibility. You know, well, they pushed us into this fight to defund Obamacare and to shut down the government. Most of you know, my members know, that wasn't exactly the strategy.
Let me get back to what do you do about Senator Cruz? How do you deal with him? Trent Lott, your predecessor, the very conservative Republican from Mississippi, was asked by the Washington Post, and he said, you got to roll them. He said, we've got to have more pushback against these people who come to Washington and suddenly announce they have all the answers. When Senator Cruz tries this again, how will you respond to that?
Look, we've got a big conference with 45. I'd like to have 51. That would make me the majority leader instead of the minority leader. We have a lot of people with different points of view. We had some tactical differences about how to get at the repeal of Obamacare, but the fact that we have some tactical differences doesn't mean we don't all share the same.
Madam President, the senior senator from Arizona urged this body to trust the Republicans. Let me be clear, I don't trust the Republicans. And I don't trust the Democrats. And I think a whole lot of Americans likewise don't trust the Republicans and the Democrats, because it is leadership in both parties that has gotten
those elected to preserve the Constitution began to dismantle it. In virtually every administration, from George Washington to George W. Bush, the government has sought ingenious ways to evade and avoid its obligations under our founding charter. But a little bit of background first. When we were colonists and the king and the parliament wanted to raise money. One of the ways they did it was by the use of the Stamp Act. The Stamp Act required of colonists, not of people in the motherland, that they have on every official piece of paper in their home, every book, every pamphlet, every deed, every mortgage, every lease, even a poster to be nailed to a tree, the king's stamp, which bore an image of the king. Question, how did the king's government know if you had his image on your papers in your house? Answer, Parliament enacted the Writs of Assistance Act, a damnable piece of legislation that allowed British soldiers to write their own search warrants. So a British soldier could show up at your front door and authorize himself in writing to examine the contents of your home, your barn, your property, ostensibly looking for the king's stamps. Of course, if they happen to find rum imported from the islands without a tax stamp on it, or furniture that had been imported from Great Britain, and you couldn't prove the tax was paid on it, the rum and the furniture would be seized and put it away. The Stamp Act and the Writs of Assistance Act were among the last straws. In fact, the Stamp Act was so controversial that Parliament eventually rescinded it in an effort to quell the uproar on this side of the pond, but it didn't work. We wrote a Declaration of Independence. The great Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence with some editing from some of his political enemies, but it stands for the affirmation of the natural rights of human beings, because it says we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among them is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We fought a revolution. We won the revolution. We wrote the Constitution. The whole purpose of the Constitution is to keep the government in check, to divide and diffuse power between the states and the central government, and further divide it and check it within the federal government itself. Much of the planning and the ideas behind the Constitution came from Greek and Latin and Roman and to a certain extent even British experience. In the summer of 1787, in a swampy area of the city of Brotherly Love, the founding fathers debated, where do our rights come from? Jefferson, who was not there, Madison, who was there, argued that our rights come from our humanity, and our humanity is a gift from God, and that rights like freedom of speech and freedom of the press and freedom of association and freedom of travel and freedom of thought and freedom to develop your personality and the right to privacy are natural human rights that are as natural to us as the fingers on the ends of our hands. That because God is perfectly free and because we are created in His image and likeness, He imbued in each and every one of us the same natural desires for and right to freedom that he has. Hamilton and Adams, the big government guys, said that's a lot of baloney, because you can't have rights without a government to protect them. You only have the rights that the government lets you have. And our rights, therefore, come from the government. They don't come from our nature. It's clear from reading the document, the Constitution, that it is intended by the language in the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments which were added in the next 3 or 4 years, that it is Jefferson and Madison who carried the day, that the whole purpose of the document is to guarantee
that our rights exist. America is the greatest country on this earth? You've been attacked by people that think that you don't believe in American exceptionalism.
I believe in my definition of American exceptionalism, but I don't believe in those who believe that America is so exceptional that they have this moral duty to use force and violence and wars to promote what we think is good. That cancels out everything that is good. If we are an exceptional nation and we live with free market and individual liberty principles, we will become the freest when we once were the freest and the most prosperous. I don't think we are today, so I think we've lost our way. So I don't think we can say, well, we are the very best, and we can't be criticizing ourselves, and therefore we can literally start a war to tell people we are the best and to tell people, yes, if you do it our way, we'll prop you up as our favorite dictator. And if you don't do it, we may drop some bombs on you. I think that's foolhardy. I think it undermines it. I think that's hurt us around the world, and I think that's why we have a lot of enemies around the world, because we try to force our will on others. But I obviously am very, very grateful that I was born and raised in this country, because we certainly were the freest. But we aren't the most prosperous anymore. And admitting the truth sometimes is hard. We're the biggest debtor in the history of the world. We owe more money than anybody else, trillions and trillions
this
of dollars.
This national feeling is good, but it won't count for much, and it won't last unless it's grounded in thoughtfulness and knowledge. An informed patriotism is what we want. And are we doing a good enough job teaching our children what America is and what she represents in the long history of the world? Those of us who are over 35 or so years of age grew up in a different America. We were taught very directly what it means to be an American. And we absorbed almost in the air a love of country and an appreciation of its institutions. If you didn't get these things from your family, you got them from the neighborhood. From the father down the street who fought in Korea, or the family who lost someone at Anzio. Or you could get a sense of patriotism from school. And if all else failed, you could get a sense of patriotism from the popular culture. The movies celebrated democratic values and implicitly reinforced the idea that America was special. TV was like that too, through the mid-60s. But now we're about to enter the 90s, and some things have changed. Younger parents aren't sure that an unambivalent appreciation of America is the right thing to teach modern children. And as for those who create the popular culture, well-grounded patriotism is no longer the style. Our spirit is back, but we haven't re-institutionalized it. We've got to do a better job of getting across that America is freedom. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of enterprise. And freedom is special and rare. It's fragile. It needs production. So we've got to teach history based not on what's in fashion, but what's important. Why the pilgrims came here, who Jimmy Doolittle was, and what those 30 seconds over Tokyo meant. You know, 4 years ago, on the 40th anniversary of D-Day, I read a letter from a young woman writing to her late father, who had fought on Omaha Beach. Her name was Lisa Zanata Hen, and she said, "We will always remember, we will never forget what the boys of Normandy did." Well, let's help her keep her word. If we forget what we did, we won't know who we are. I'm warning of an eradication of the American memory that could result ultimately in an erosion of the American spirit. Let's start with some basics. More attention to American history and a greater emphasis on civic ritual. And let me offer lesson number one about America. All great change in America begins at the dinner table. So tonight in the kitchen, I hope the talking begins. And children, if your parents haven't been teaching you what it means to be an American, let them know and nail them on it. That would be a very American thing to do.
I have a message! A message from the people of Kentucky. A message that is loud and clear and does not mince words. We've come to take our government back. They say that the U.S. Senate is the world's most deliberative body. Well, I'm going to ask them to deliberate upon this. The American people are unhappy with what's going on in Washington. A 11% of the people approve of what's going on in Congress. But tonight, there's a Tea Party tidal wave, and we're sending a message to them. It's a message that I will carry with me on day one. It's a message of fiscal sanity. It's a message of limited constitutional government and balanced budgets. When I arrive in Washington, I will ask them respectfully to deliberate upon this. We are in the midst of a debt crisis, and the American people want to know why we have to balance our budget and they don't. I will ask them respectfully to deliberate upon this. Government does not create jobs. Individual entrepreneurs, businessmen and women create jobs, but not the government. I will ask them respectfully to deliberate upon this. Why is America great? Why are we the greatest, richest, and freest country ever known to man? America is exceptional, but it is not inherently so. America is exceptional because we embraced freedom, because we enshrined it in our documents, and because we have lived and fought for the principles of freedom. America will remain great if we remain proud of America, if we remain proud of the American system, the system that is enshrined in our founding documents, the system that protects and promotes the free exchange of goods, the system that protects capitalism that has made this country great. America will remain great if and when we understand, if and when we understand that government cannot create prosperity. We have to understand that it comes from ourselves. It does not come from government. We are the creators of that prosperity. Until we understand that, we cannot truly protect and defend our liberties. I have great confidence in the American system. We must believe in ourselves and not believe that somehow some benevolent leader in a distant capital will take care of us, will save us from ourselves. We must once again believe in ourselves. I will ask the Senate respectfully to deliberate upon this. Do we wish to live free or be enslaved by debt? Do we believe in the individual or do we believe in the state? Thomas Jefferson wrote that government is best that governs least. Likewise, freedom is best when enjoyed by the most. America can rise up and surmount these problems if we just get government out of our way. Yeah.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. G.K. Chesterton wrote, America is the only nation in the world that is founded on a creed. That creed is set forth with dogmatic and even theological lucidity in the Declaration of Independence. Perhaps the only piece of practical politics that is also theoretical politics and also great literature. It enunciates that all men are equal in their claim to justice, that governments exist to give them that justice, and that their authority is for that just reason. It certainly does condemn anarchism, and it does also, by inference, condemn atheism, since it clearly names the Creator as the ultimate authority from whom these equal rights are derived. Nobody expects a modern political system to proceed logically in the application of such dogmas, and in the matter of God and government, it is naturally God whose claim is taken more lightly. The point is that there is a creed, if not about divine, at least about human things. We are the only nation in human history to be founded upon a creed, a belief that nature's God has endowed man with rights and dignity, and that we form governments to uphold justice by restraining powers and reluctantly trusting temporary stewards to administer it. Ours is the right to retain the maximum freedom for individual citizens living together in community, guided by the compass of natural law, self-mastery, brotherly love, patriotism, and embracing the commensurate responsibility for perpetual vigilance over our own disordered passions and the misuse of power by men entrusted to govern. We inherited liberty, and we must jealously guard her against molestation and appropriation by the corrupt, especially in these perilous times. As the culture of hedonism, apathy, relativism, and mediocrity degrades our exceptional American spirit, we are witnessing the flouting of the rule of law, private property, sound money, free markets, and religious freedom by government. Do we proceed as subjects of arbitrary power down the road to serfdom, moral decay, tyranny, and decline? Or do we chart a new course, standing on the shoulders of giants, and reclaim our rightful place in history as the land of the free and the home of the brave? There are some amongst us who see America's days as over, and that we need to be one among many in a global scheme of fake money, consolidated power, and perpetual war. Yet many more of us believe America is a dream unrealized, an experiment in self-governance gone awry, a once proud confederated republic of liberty wounded by success, excess, and cultural Marxism. Do we accept defeat and follow the path of our European forebears? No. We have always harbored a rebellious streak, a revolutionary's heart, and the rising spirit of liberty. We draw the line. We turn back the imperialist impulse, and we crush the degrading ethos of mediocrity. Independence Day was the culmination of centuries of battles for liberty, and like all good things, must ever be made new. For the gravity of this world is a drag of corruption, vice, and tyranny. We are Americans, and we flee not the fight, but join it more courageously, vigorously, and with a deeper resolve when all seems lost and darkness looms. Raise the star-spangled banner and take the high ground with liberty in your heart, and with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. As Americans stuff our faces with hot dogs, set the sky on fire with pyrotechnics, and enjoy our barbecues and ball games, we must always remember that we aren't celebrating a government. We do that in September, the anniversary of the Constitution, written years after the Declaration. We aren't celebrating our elected idiots either, or our foreign and domestic frenemies. We are celebrating our secession from Great Britain. We are celebrating our freedom. We are celebrating our rebellion against tyranny, which is allegiance to ordered liberty and the longing of our hearts to be free. We look to our flag. Yes, our flag, not the flag of a king, tyrant, or government, but to the people's flag, Old Glory. And we rejoice in knowing that we are free, and that to exercise that freedom, we have to appeal to a higher authority than government and ourselves. We have to appeal to the human spirit that always yearns for liberty. As Joseph Pierce observed in what he dubs Chesterton's Salute to the American Flag, a salute signifying Chesterton's hope that America might become a beacon of Christianity worldwide, lamenting that the English have often forgotten the cross on their flag, Chesterton hoped that the crossless flag of the United States may yet become a symbol of something by whose stars we are illumined and by whose stripes we are healed. For you Christians, that has profound theological implications. And for those of you who are not, know that the spirit of liberty we celebrate and defend came to us from a Christian philosophical understanding of human nature. Unless we acknowledge that man is capable of incredible grandeur and yet prone to corruption, why bother with limiting government? Why make free markets regular? Why bother with the rule of law at all? You yearn to be free, but free of what? Free for what? Aim high, stand tall, and always remember, the American creed is liberty. You have a choice. Work hard now to further liberty by having real conservatives and real libertarians take over the GOP, or watch the statists in both parties push their corporatist agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who want to fundamentally transform our republic into an empire abroad and a police state at home. End the destruction of our economy by the Republican-Democrat duopoly and their Keynesian masters at the Federal Reserve by standing with the real conservatives. To defeat the lawless hordes of cultural Marxists, statists, collectivists, oligarchs, useful idiots, and their fellow travelers, especially the Democrat socialists, first you must crush the rhinos for liberty. You are live on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex Stars and Stripes, broadcasting to you from the once shining city on the river, now the District of Corruption. Doctor?
Doctor, and I'm your co-host, Trog. Hey, did we just have a holiday? I was curious.
Yeah,
There was a lot of noise in the air. Yeah, there was a lot of noise in the air and fireworks going off and stuff. I wasn't quite sure if we had a holiday or not. In my cave, you know, I miss so much of society's, you know, little games. But, yeah, that was a, I have to tell you, that was a deep, deep clip and opening dialogue you had there. I don't know what to think about it right now. I'm having to warm into this one a little bit, because it is supposed to be one of the most important holidays or recognitions of, you know, what makes America great. I wonder how many people actually understand that. You know, my son said that he was going around, you know, he was telling people, you know, happy Independence Day, and people would look at him like, huh? You know, because it's 4th of July, it's time to party, baby! Yeah! Well, what's the 4th of July about? I don't know. What country are you in? I don't know. Who's president right now? I don't know. Who's vice president? I don't know. Who's Speaker of the House? I don't know. Where are we at war? I don't know. Yeah? So, I would say that, you know, I've had usually when I work on my property, I do a lot of thinking and a lot of soul searching about, you know, whatever, you know, I just random thoughts going through my mind, talking to God, whatever the case may be, as I dig in the dirt. And, you know, we've been doing this a couple of years, it seems, to have gone by very quickly. And I see a battle of epic proportions. I didn't see, you know, so much of the fear that people had when Obama got elected. You know, everybody was freaking out. And, you know, I don't know. I figured out real quick who he was, what he stood for, what his goals were. And I wasn't so much concerned about that as I was about the Republican Party and what they were going to do or not do to stop him from his agenda. One of the things that I don't think a lot of people really understand this, but during a absolute depression, economic depression, what was the first thing that President Obama did? He expanded government like a crazy man, like usually governments expand government when we're in a prosperous era. He did it while we were in a depression. And I'm not sure, you know, I saw that happening, and I'm not sure a lot of people really caught that or the significance of it. But when we move forward into the past the primary that Romney stole into the election, one of the things that we heard Romney say a little ways into it is he started, you know, turning from his conservative talk. Not that he ever fooled me, but one of the things he said was, well, we can't do a lot about the budget or the government, the size of government, because, you know, if we try to untangle it, it'll cause problems. That was exactly what President Obama planned, or his handlers, however you want to look at it. They blew this country up. They created a bubble. They expanded while people couldn't pay their house, while people are losing their homes, losing their jobs, you know, losing their life savings. They expanded the federal government. Why? Because that's what Democrats do when they're in power. Now, here's the problem. Used to be a time when Republicans would try to scale it back. Well, if you go back prior to President Obama, we had the Republicans had power for the first time in eons, you know, of all the houses and the presidency. And what did they do? They expanded the federal government. No Child Left Behind. They expanded federal departments, the Department of Education, and launched the endless war on terror. And, created Homeland Security and the Patriot Act and all these things that embedded themselves into our society that are almost unravelable. We almost can't unravel them because they're so huge. They're such a monstrous part of our society and our economy. Then you add what Obama's done. Now, what have the Republicans done in the four and a half years since we gave them back the House and broke the supermajority in the Senate? That's the key question you have to ask yourself, because a year, 2 years, yeah, you know, you can argue some points here and there. But 4.5 years later, absolutely nothing to stop him. The only reason amnesty hasn't passed is not the Republican leadership. It's the House. It's a large number of people going, "This ain't going nowhere, dog." That's what it's about. If Boehner had the votes, he would pass it tomorrow. Because why? Because he's another corrupt lifer that doesn't even know. I mean, he has an R by his name, but I don't think that means anything. You know, I really wish these guys, by law, had to wear like a Boy Scout, you know, those things that we wore over our shirt that hung down like a ribbon and you had all your ribbons on them or all your badges. I wish they had to wear one of those, but with all their corporate sponsors on them. I think that would be hilarious, because that's the reality of what we're facing. A lot of people don't understand, because I remember using the word fascism, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and people were like, "What are you talking about?" And I'm going, a merging between major companies and government to a point where you don't know the difference, and no matter what happens, you lose. The laws that are passed, the taxes that are raised, the bailouts, the wars, all these, this endless insanity and corporate bailouts, while old people can't, you know, while we cut Social Security costs for old people or medical or VA doesn't get taken care of, but we can have a $600 billion, you know, military budget. So we can have a $1 trillion plane that still doesn't work, or a submarine that doesn't work, or a littoral craft that was supposed to be stealth that isn't stealth, you know, so we can have $500 hammers and people can make bloody fortunes off of your back. And then they can stand up there and say, we got to raise taxes because the economy's bad and we need money. But when you look at a $3.6 trillion budget, which is $1 trillion more than Bush, and Bush was $1 trillion more than, go back to his dad's era. It just keeps growing and growing and growing, and it won't stop. Neither party will stop it. When I listen to your clip and I listen to Rand, and I look at the abuse that he's taking right now, because he's trying to bring some sanity to the conversation of the war party trying to launch us into multiple wars again. You know, without rhyme nor reason, we don't even know who the hell we're fighting. We're fighting the guys we funded in Syria. You know, nobody has ever stopped and said, what the hell happened in Libya? And I'm not talking about Benghazi. I'm talking about Libya. I'm talking about 47 weapons depots that never were gotten control of. Now those weapons are all over Africa and all over the Middle East. You wonder where they're getting their arms? What's it? He had a ton of them there. And so, but nobody ever settled with that. The dialogue around that was nothing. You know, it was supposed to be a no-fly zone. We blew a country apart. Who needed boots on the ground? You had rebels, you had jihadists, and all you had to do was bomb the shit out of the the government institutions and military. And now, like Rand says, you have a jihadist wonderland. And that is spread all through the Middle East. Then we're poking around in Syria, you know, arming the moderates. I don't know how in the hell they get that by the news, but they do. And I don't know. There's such an apathy or a submission to the lies that are going on in our country, around the world, in the media. I wonder how we're ever going to get decent people or a decent president again. I really do. And you know, you got to fight. And you continue to fight, and you continue to fight, and you continue to fight. But if people won't fight, then how do you fight? You know, what do you get? 10% of the country that's got their eyes open and understand really how bad it is and what's going on. And the corruption is so widespread through both parties that they don't listen, they don't give a crap. We're down to like, what is it, 7 or 9% approval rating of Congress, and they don't give a shit because you're voting them back in. You know, the same assholes that were there during the Bush administration that have done nothing in the Obama administration to check his power or abuse of power, whatever you want to call it, and they're voting them right back in. And if that's the pattern, okay, for 2014, what's going to happen in 2016? I mean, hell, maybe we'll just have a merging of the party and we'll have a Bush-Hillary ticket. How's that sound, Rex? Because that's about what's going on.
I can't tell the difference.
You can't tell the difference. And they might as well run together. And then Boehner, you know, he could be like, you know, like the flower or the ring bearer. You know, and McConnell, you know, he can carry that musket around with him and hold it above his head and go rah, 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 you know. And people actually applauded that, Rex. I was like, are you kidding me? Are you freaking kidding me? You know, all he wants to do is be the majority of the Senate, the leader of the Senate. For what? So he can pay back all of his cronies because he hasn't done shit to stop Obama, anything. All they've done is abuse the conservatives and the libertarian-minded people in Congress since 2010, since they got, you know, a new wave of them in there. So, I mean, it really, I at this point in time, I don't know what 2014 is going to produce. You know, I'm kind of keeping an eye on it, not as focused as I was in the beginning after they put five rhinos right back in power. Of course, they got to win in November, and maybe, I don't know, maybe the conservatives and the people who feel like they just got screwed will just set it out and let a Democrat win. I don't know. It doesn't matter, really, does it? You know,
no.
If their voting record is a 65%, they're a Democrat anyway. So Democrat or Republican. It's the same thing. So it'll be interesting to see what's going on, and it'll be interesting to see if people wake up. It'll be interesting to see. I'd love to do a study if I had the money to run the thing, but to actually do an online poll and ask people and see how many people even know what the 4th of July means. It'd be interesting to know that, because I know we haven't taught history in this country for 30, 40 years. And if people don't go out and search it out for themselves, the people in power, they're not interested in you knowing the history of this country and what it stands for or what the original intent was. Or, you know, I hear Rand talk about freedom being the primary thing. You hear Reagan talk about this is what makes America great, the freedom, you know, to pursue your own dreams, to start a business, to, you know, create wealth, you know, to pursue your career, whatever the case, whatever your choice is, without interference of government. Government is there for one thing, to protect that freedom and to equalize the laws to make sure that in a big country people don't step all over other people in that process. I mean, it's pretty simple stuff, Rex. And it doesn't matter how big the country is today or how little it was in 1776, those principles work. And if we don't get back to them, then we're just another Europe. That's really what, you know, all you got to do is look at Europe and go, there you go. You know, we can have a seat.
Especially the
we
Baltic.
Can have a seat. Yeah, we can have a seat on the European Council, because that's the goal for the neoliberals, neocon-type personality, is one government that controls everything. And all you are, your country will be a state of that system, not an independent sovereign state. And most of the people in power that we have in power right now, that's what they want. They have this vision. They believe that for the world, for peace and prosperity and equalization, who knows what these freaking psychotics think, you know, but they have this vision that it's all under one umbrella and that everybody is subservient to that system. And that's not a conspiracy theory. I mean, that's what the UN was created for. Duh. You know, you don't have to have a tinfoil hat to figure that one out. There's people believe that listen to Pelosi. You know, Mexico and the U.S. are one country with a border between them. You know, we got to get rid of this border. You know, this whole thing of, you know, we talked about it earlier or whatever on chat or whatever about this North American Union. That's been a goal for a long time. You know, they just want to merge that system into one basic trading zone. What was NAFTA about? That was the prep work for that. So, and you've got to give up a lot more of your rights and prosperity, because America has been so far above everybody else economically and prosperity-wise that you have to give that up in order to equalize so they can merge those systems together. That's, like I say, that ain't no conspiracy theory. That's basic planning, economics. So here we are, 4th of July, Independence Day. Hey, that was a good movie. Hope you had a good barbecue.
Yeah.
Hope you're ready to get back
and
in the bowl fight
games.
Because, yeah, well, I have to admit, we did do a barbecue. But
why wouldn't you?
Here we are. We barbecue all the time. So that's my opening, and I really hope people get it between now and the end of 2014, and because we're already in the presidential primary. I mean, it's you know, the battle's been running for months and months and months. And there's one thing. There's three things at stake: your personal freedom, your money, and more war. That's really what's at stake. All these other things people talk about, those are just minor issues. Even though you think they're important, those three things are what is at stake in this country. Your freedom, your money, and more war. That's it. That's my opening.
All right. Good opening. Yeah, Independence Day. That's that movie with Will Smith and Brundlefly, where they saved the world from aliens. Would that it were that dramatic, but aliens are not invading the planet. So that's not really our concern. The barbarians are not at the gates, so that's not even our concern. Guess where the barbarians are? They're across the river from me, in the imperial city. The barbarians are within your walls, and you're sitting back thinking that things are normal and we can have Democrat and Republican politics, and there's conservatives, and there's libertarians, and there's liberals, and we just want them to have bipartisan getting along and some civility, and things are different now, and, you know, 238 years ago, we were different. We've evolved. We're so developed now. Give me a friggin' break. When was the last time you read the Declaration of Independence? Because I get people all the time accusing me of supporting a dead Confederacy and trying to re-erect the South, because I sometimes talk about the fact that we do have a right to secession. Well, if you think that that's not a right, if you think somehow Abraham Lincoln invading my country and killing my countrymen and fighting for the Union somehow eliminated the right to secession, what the hell are you celebrating on July 4th? You're celebrating wealthy, landed, aristocratic colonists seceding from their sovereign and their parliament. That's what they did. They risked their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. I think five of them ended up being captured. 12 of them lost all of their estates. Several of them lost their sons. That's what they laid on the line. And these are men who had money, who had power, who had pretty much all the yummy, wonderful material stuff that you could possibly want in the 18th century. And they laid it all on the line for something that they deemed worth more. Liberty. And what are you trading it for today? Food stamps? Unemployment benefits? Minimum wage? Some kind of bleeding heart, misguided bullshit about refugees on your southern border, or that Islam is really the religion of peace, or that Democrats really do have an egalitarian love of liberty and equality for all men, or that the Republicards are actually conservative. This is what you're trading your liberty for? You're trading your liberty for the Patriot Act, Section 215, that says that anybody can be indefinitely detained because the smarter and better people running government know who the bad guys are? People like Jihad Jane Muhammad, who run illegally into foreign countries and hang out with friggin' terrorists who have now set up a caliphate in western Syria and Iraq? This is the people that you want to put in charge and give indefinite power to indefinitely detain you without trial, violating the Constitution? These are the people that you think should be able to download every friggin' email and text that you send? These are the people that talk flowery conservative language, and then when they get challenged by a conservative, go running to Democrat voters and buy them by promising them more federal crap. That's what's going on. And yeah, we do celebrate July 4th, Independence Day, because it's important to remember why you're an American. It's important to remember these principles. But it's not just flowery history. It's not just language. It's not just, you know, shits and giggles of some days gone past. It's something that you live now. You live it today, or you will be responsible for it disappearing from the face of the earth, because sitting back and doing nothing is aiding and abetting the enemy. And the enemy of liberty is always there. The enemy of liberty is tyranny. The enemy of liberty is having envy. The enemy of liberty is wanting what the other guy has without working for it, but by taking it from him. But because you're a good person and you don't want to be a thief, you won't actually steal it from him. What you'll do is vote to have some asshole with a badge steal it from him on your behalf. This is what's going on in this country right now. And we talk about politics like, oh, you know, just turn up, get out the vote, and you know, the lesser of three evils, and all bullshit. This is real, because when the shit hits the fan, it's going to happen so fast, you will have whiplash. You will be paying $1 million for bread in no time. Jihadis will be blowing up things in your streets, and all those people that are on government dependency now, when their food runs out, will turn on you and kill you. That's what will happen if we don't maintain the system of ordered liberty. And the Democrats have no friggin' desire to do it, and the Republicans are helping them destroy it. The only chance you have is people who have principles
constitutional principles, conservative principles, which are necessarily libertarianish. That's who you have to work for. And so far, it's been a mixed bag in these 2014 midterms. Are you going to whine and bitch about it, or are you going to get off your ass and do something about it? Because that's what it takes. And, Chris, I don't know if people are really getting this. I don't know if people are really serious about this. I think people think this is fun and games. Well, maybe it's fun and games for you, but I live here. And if you don't get off your ass and do something about it, we're all going to be in the hole. That's my second opening rant. Folks, we had a 30-minute clip in the beginning there. I put a little human in there, a little Dennis Miller, but there was also some Judge Napolitano from explaining a little bit about the Constitution. You heard from Reagan, you heard from Rand Paul, and you also heard from these rhinos that pretend that they know something about good governance when all they know to do is support the current corporatist system by speaking against the Democrats. They're not doing anything to stop Obama's imperial presidency. Remember, they built the imperial presidency under George Bush. Obama just accelerated it. They've helped him. Why? Because they somehow think that since Bill Clinton was the first black president and Obama's the first gay president, that the next president is likely to be the first lesbian, Hillary Clinton, because the only thing the Republicans have to offer you is another friggin' Bush. That's their plan. It's ridiculous. Call the number 646-649-1013 if you want to talk about liberty, if you want to talk about the Constitution, if you even dare approach us today because we're a little bit fired up. At least I am. Trog seems unusually calm, probably because he's got good weather and has been working all day. But the bottom line is that you got to come in and tell me what you're doing, because we still have about 40% of this primary season left, and then as soon as that's over, as soon as the elections are over, we're going full on into 2016. And unless you want to see a replay of Dole, McCain, Romney, and all the other losers that the Republicans put up, you better do something about it now. You drop.
It's good to see you chill in for me when I'm mellow. I've been outside pounding it, man, for the last couple, 3, 4, 5 days on this project. So I am a little subdued. But also, I'm trying to be a little bit calmer than normal. I've been chastised by my better half. You're more than correct. I anybody's listened to me talk over the last year and a half. You know, I'm usually the one screaming, "Wake the hell up!" You know, this is not a joke. You know, I live in a neighborhood, first time in my life. I've always been kind of rural or out in the country or up against the wilderness, you know, ever since I left home. But and I can hear conversations going on around me, and I listen to shit people talk about, and I'm like going, oh, God, people are clueless. You know, they just – I went down and bought a bunch of materials for this project, and, you know, I sent you a chat on it, and it was about $150 more than it was when a couple of years ago when I thought I was going to do the project. I'm thinking you don't hear any of this crap. All you hear, including on Fox Noise, about, you know, how the stock market's up and unemployment's down, and, you know, everybody's lying. You know, number one, the stock market is based on, you know, the trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars that the Fed has printed and infused into the market. So it's basically, let's see, for lack of a better term, think monopoly. It's about that phony. And unemployment, there's millions and millions and millions of people have just given up. They're not on the rolls. So when you say, 6.5% unemployment, no, let's try 15 plus. And nobody will talk about it. You know, a handful of people will. Schiff is one of our favorite guys, and you know, they call him and he gets on there and he tells the truth and everybody attacks him, just like they did before the 2008 crash when he predicted that, and the one before that when he predicted that one. Because, you know, you don't have to be a genius. You just have to understand basic economics. When the Fed puts out cheap money, and a lot of it, and there's no gold standard, so they just keep putting more out, and the federal government continues to spend and launch wars, and here's something important, and I don't know how many people really understand this. But we have a whole thread on this on the group. But how many people don't understand this? But we're always at war. We've been at war 211 times since the Second World War. I don't know how many people even understand that. We're always invading something, or we're, you know, like in 45 nations in Africa. You know, the American people don't even know this. This is your country, your tax dollars, your increased taxes that you just got raised. So they can do this shit, and you don't even know why. And you have no say. Hell, Congress didn't have any say because they've given the executive, you know, branch this because we're in this unlimited, unending war on terror. You know, the guy sitting in the Oval Office has all the power. So he can launch this, he can launch that, he can send ships to, you know, and arms to Africa. He can send, you know, fleets to Asia to mess with China because China quit buying our debt, so now they're the enemy. I mean, people don't even follow this stuff, Rex. They don't even, I don't even think they want to understand it. And yet it impacts everything our government says and does. And it comes right down to your household, how much, in terms of how much money you can make, how much you can keep, and how many more rules that you have to comply, and whether or not you have militarized police in your community now. And people don't even understand it. And I've said this, and I'll say it again and again and again. Economics and foreign policy. If you don't understand those two things, then you have no clue what's going on in this country. Period. It's not about the bridges or the housing or gay marriage or pot. It isn't about any of those things. Those two things will make or break us. Because the rest of the world, believe it or not, and Ron Paul has said this for years, but I'm not sure he, to me, he doesn't necessarily articulate it well, but the rest of the world is sick to death of the bully empire. And we have countries that are merging together that have huge economies, and they also have big armies, and they have nuclear weapons going enough. And they're forming their own economic blocks, their own trade blocks. They have their own independent voice in terms of how they think things should be done around the world. And a lot of it is counter to what the U.S. has been doing for the last 15, 20, 30 years. And so we call them enemies. But in reality, they're the ones that are trading and building industry and cutting trade deals all over the world while we move military around the world. So there's got to be a point in time where people get this. I know a lot of people do. I know the Liberty Movement's been way up on this for years, anybody who's ever, you know, followed that. But I don't think conservatives get it, because it sure seems like a lot of them just jumped right on the bandwagon with, you know, all of our new enemies that the U.S. claims we have and you know, start beating the war drums, and everybody starts jumping up and down like we haven't had enough death and destruction. And I love what Reagan said and what Rand Paul articulated again. War is absolutely the last thing you should ever think about doing, and you have to exhaust every other, you know, possible scenario. It has to be a direct threat, not a perceived threat. I mean, what the hell? Who's threatening the shores of the United States right now? Oh, my God, they're terrorists. Well, what are you going to do, kill a billion of them? You know, our shores aren't even secured. All of our military expenditures is overseas. It's not here in the United States. We don't have a good missile defense system. Our power grids are not secure. Our dams are not secure. We're so busy, you know, running around the world blowing up other countries and calling it national security that our actual security sucks, if somebody wanted to really put it to us. And I'm talking about somebody with enough power to do it, you know, not some rogue, you know, freaking terrorist, but, you know, somebody with the weapons and the ships and the submarines that we can't detect. So this is important, because you can create enemies. You poke somebody in the eye enough, and they're going to get pissed off. And I really believe that...
You don't have to poke Muslims too much to get them pissed off. They tend to be pissed off anyway.
Yeah, but I'm talking about other big countries. You know what I mean?
Oh, you mean like Russia and China?
Yeah, no shit. Or India. Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, I mean, there is no doubt that there is a serious, you know, group of people in this world that are kind of crazy. You know, they're trying to take, you know, create a caliphate right now. And I would say the good foreign policy would be to quit arming the bastards, for one, and not funding them and not training them.
Yeah.
That'd be a good start for foreign policy right there. You know? I mean,
yeah, you'd have to convince the jihadi in the White House that that's a bad idea. I don't think that's going to happen.
We're in a sci-fi movie, Rex. Go ahead.
It's worse than a sci-fi movie. I mean, I've never seen a movie where, you know, people elect a guy who's going to fund and arm the people that we have given up our liberties in order to defend ourselves from, in order to go over there and fight them again. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. It's a little, it's crazy. You know, either the neocon foreign policy establishment in this particular POTUS, who everybody knows is either, you know, still thinks of him as this, you know, progressive as being pushed around by Republicans, which makes no sense, or they think that he's a Muslim sleeper, which is possible, but we don't have direct evidence of that. What he is a neocon with jihadi sympathies. So it's the same stupid neocon policies that we had with the Cheney-Bush administration that now we got with the Obama-Boehner-Reid administration. It doesn't change because it's profitable for somebody else. It ain't profitable for you, and it ain't right. And the thing that people are forgetting, right, you know, Americans historically are not pussies when it comes to war. We just don't want to fight them for stupid reasons or for someone else's interests. You have to remember something. In 1773, they put in the stamp, the tea tax, right? And then there was the Stamp Act, which was repealed shortly thereafter. But one of the wealthiest of the guys who signed the Declaration of Independence was Charles Carroll of Carrollton. He was also the only Catholic, which, since this is mostly a Protestant nation, put him in kind of a religious minority also. And he had the most to lose as part of a religious minority and also the guy with the most stuff, right? But what was his response when the Peggy Stewart on October 15, 1774, which was a ship owned by an Annapolis company, came into the harbor with, you know, tea and was willing to, you know, deal with the tax and all that stuff. Carroll's response, and he was not a violent man, right? He even criticized some of the Boston Tea Party radicals for their jumping, you know, the gun and what they did. But what was his response? He said that the owner of the Peggy Stewart, Anthony Stewart, should make amends to save his own skin by burning not just the tea, but his own ship. These men were extreme in the sense that they laid it all on the line for what they perceived to be a higher ideal than mere material crap, but the right to live your life free. They laid it on the line knowing that they were committing high treason, an offense punishable by death. Are you sharpening your club over there? Are you getting ready for war or something?
No, I'm by a bamboo. The wind is blowing a bamboo chime.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
They laid it all on the line knowing that they could be killed legally for their treasonous act if they didn't win the war. And then they went on to fight a war for 8 years against the most powerful military on the planet, the British Empire's mercantilist military that secured land so far that the sun never set on the British Empire. This is the kind of men who formed this country. And because they put out a beacon for liberty, people came from all over the world to come here to live free. That's the kind of beacon we used to hold out and attract the best and the brightest from every corner of the globe to come here and establish a life of liberty. And now you have a beacon for the world that says, watch out, if you're not on our fake money scheme payroll, we might have to deliver you some democracy, smart bomb style. And the other beacon we hold out is, hey, bring me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, not yearning to be free, but yearning to vote to get free shit from those who produce it. This is not what the founding fathers gave us. They wanted friendships with foreign people. They wanted no entangling alliances. They wanted a strong defense that if anybody ever tried to come into this country to take our stuff or kill our people, they would meet a force that would destroy them quickly. That's who they were. That's who our immigrant heritage is. Things have changed dramatically recently because there is a group, a small foreign German intellectual elite that's permeated our academies and our institutions and inspired this kind of this Jacobin impulse. Remember, the French had a revolution in 1789 like we had one in 1776. Ours was a revolution against tyranny to establish timeless conservative principles of liberty inherited through Greece, inherited through Rome, inherited through Christendom, inherited through Anglo-Saxon common law, inherited through the Magna Carta, the jury system, the militia system. That's what they fought for. The Jacobins fought a revolution to upend, throw in an altar, and establish a new egalitarian society based on the whims of intellectual perverts. And those people have permeated our country now. They are wooing your kids. They control Madison Avenue. They control Hollywood. And people are now with a mindset that somehow government is supposed to be your mother, your priest, your daddy, your grocery store,
your conscience,
your object of worship. It's your decision maker. That's how they think. Because, of course, they're the great philosopher kings who can tell you how to live your life better than you can. Well, that's not what this country is about. This country is about you're responsible for your liberty. You're responsible for your actions. You're responsible for taking care of the people in your community. You're responsible for taking care of your family. And we have some government at different levels to coordinate various activities so that you don't have to negotiate which side of the road you're going to drive on every time you go outside, so that you don't have to negotiate, well, how are we going to defend the border with divisions from Massachusetts and divisions from California? You know, that's what we have government for. But it is not supposed to tell me what I can flush, what I can put in my light, whether I can collect rain on my own property. It's not supposed to tell me that I have to wear my seatbelt. I don't want to wear a seatbelt. I don't wear a seatbelt. Oh, you might die. Well, that's my responsibility. It's stupid not to wear a seatbelt, but if you want to be stupid, you have a right to be stupid. And we have to force people to make good decisions. They have to be good environmentalists and tolerant of everybody and everything that we tell them to be tolerant of. And we have to make them afraid of some boogeyman, whether it's the war on poverty, the war on drugs, the war on terror. Terror is a tactic of war. You can't go to war against a tactic. This kind of stupidity is what makes you dumb, it makes you afraid, and it gets you to give up your rights. Get back in touch with the real roots of who we are. We're made to be free. This is the greatest nation on the face of the planet, and we are pissing it away because we're too lazy to get involved in the political process and prevent douchebags like Karl Rove and Haley Barbour and Thad Cochran from stealing an election from the one that the people elected by attracting Democrat voters, not by convincing them that conservative principles are right, but by playing the Democrat playbook and buying them with food stamps and lunch programs and anal ampules and Twittery, just, you know, racist crap. That's who the Republicans are. And frankly, that kind of action makes me want to destroy the Republican Party, but the fact is then we'd have to build an organization from the ground up, which is impossible in this environment with these rules. So the best revenge is to take away their organization from them. That can't happen unless you get involved. That's what it takes, Chris. People have to get involved, and getting involved doesn't mean just showing up on election day to push a lever. That's not going to work. You got to do more than that. Call the number 646-649-1013. We want to thank everybody for sharing the show. Remember, Chris and I do this because it's important and we live here. But we don't get paid to do it, and nobody knows that this show exists unless you tell them. So when you see it out on Facebook, Twitter, anywhere on the internet. Share it, retweet it, put it out there. But remember, nothing works better than a personal invitation, and all you're going to do is tell somebody to come and listen to a different perspective, take a look at things from a wider angle that isn't locked into some ideology or party, and start thinking about liberty and what you can actually do about it. You don't have to agree with everything we say or our tone or my language, but just get people to think a little bit differently beyond the Fox noise, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, cheerleader, repeat mentality of ginning up the fear against Democrats and Obama so that they can elect Democrats and people like Obama who just happen to wear khaki pants and blue blazers and walk around like there's a stick up their ass because they happen to be Republicans. That's not the answer. So, you know, we want to thank you for that. And remember, anytime you want to listen to any of our shows, usually we broadcast 9 p.m. Eastern Sundays, you go to blogtalkradio.com/libertythunder. All the shows are right there. You click on it. It plays right in your browser free of charge. And if you go below the scrolling graphics and you right-click download, you can download an MP3, email it to somebody, burn a CD, take it to your Campaign for Liberty, Tea Party, Republican Party meetings, AA meetings. Just get the information out there. Get people involved. We got primaries coming up for people like Joe Miller in Alaska, Justin Amash in Michigan. So you got to get busy. Chris?
No, that was a good rant. I was just kind of scrolling through, taking a look, and you know, seeing what the news feed was saying about who's blowing up what and where. It's really important to define what you believe in, and I think that's. I mean, obviously, when you listen to us, we focus on specific things, and I don't know. You know, you've said, and I've heard you say this before. You're a little bit more public than I am. In your main profile and things like that, I post nothing on my profile. I only post in my group, but you know, I do the shows. That's it. I don't put anything on. There's nothing on there. My name, you know, a couple pictures of my yard. Maybe I think that I left on there. But but you say that people kind of attack you a lot. You know, they're like, you know, hardcore, you know, hawkish type Republicans say that you're a libertarian. Libertarians say you're a, you know, right-wing Christian. I mean, it never ends. I think I'm right down the middle. I think the word conservative has been bastardized. I said that way back when I was a guest on the Tex and Rex show a lot, you know, that one of the challenges is the verbiage. You know, it's like the Tea Party. When you say Tea Party, you know, they've spent, the Republicans and the leftists have spent 4 years bastardizing the Tea Party name. And yet, when you look at what the Tea Party stood for, it stood for sound economics, taxed enough already, you know, quit wasting our money, and really, you know, breaking the stranglehold of centralized power and getting it back to the states. That's really the primary concept behind it. It wasn't a Republican thing. You know, it wasn't a right-wing thing. It wasn't a Christian thing. It was a concept. I mean, you know, in some ways, there's even been an argument about where the original Tea Party started from, because some people would argue it was Dr. Paul, you know, because he's always been Constitution first, sound money, quit blowing up the damn world and calling it spreading democracy when that has nothing to do with it. You know, it's all adventurism and you know, who knows? I mean, we're propping up people and then funding people against them as soon as we prop them up. You can't even keep up with this crap. And we're doing it so much that there is blowback. And I remember the abuse that Ron Paul got for that. You know, and so you look at in your clip when Rand won, he won on a Tea Party movement. And yet now that he is a threat to the establishment, they want to call him a libertarian. You know, it just never ends. And that's the point where you as an individual have to say, okay, what do I believe in? I'm a simple guy. You know, I'm complex when I do research and I put together information, but it really boils down, what makes it simple for me is I know who I am and what I believe in. And I believe in the greatness of what this country was founded on. I believe and understand and have spent not as much time as you have or as many years studying and researching, you know, the original intent. History is a big thing for me. Why? Because history tells it all. There's nothing new under the sun. You know, we've had these totalitarian dictator people who want to tell everybody how to live and what to believe and what jobs they should have, you know, and what weapons they can carry or not carry. Since the beginning, you know, when we were crawling out of caves, beating each other up with clubs, you know, this is, none of this is difficult. You know, it's constantly, you know, it evolves in the sense of technology and the complexity of society, because our world is smaller and our population's bigger and we have technology. But the core principles never frickin' change. What's important to, you know, me on my piece of property in my house, my family, you know, making money, keeping the money I make, making sound decisions, being responsible for myself and my family, and keeping a watchful eye out for my neighbors, you know, and being a good neighbor. I mean, this is all what America was founded on. Have we made mistakes in this country? You're damn right. But usually it's government. You know, if you track most of the atrocities of this country, it's always the government. You know, people tend to try to do the right thing because they're trying to survive. You know, and the bigger and more intrusive government gets in your life, the more nanny state you have, the more government tells you, you know, how to live your life, and the more society, you know, is corrupted, falls apart, the family unit, the more government needs to grow to make more laws and have more programs because society and families are no longer functioning. And we can trace all this back historically to the 60s, you know, generation, you know, and the revolution of the 60s. You know, America as we knew it fell apart, and we had this new neoliberal anything goes comes out of society, and it permeates our society with the largest generation in the history of the world, the baby boomer generation. And we've had this downward spiral ever since. Now, here's the problem. All those freaks are in power now. They're in your colleges. They're in your school systems. They're in your government institutes. And they're in both parties, but the majority of them are in the Democrat Party. And so, you know, it's ripping the core of our society apart, because here's the key. And if you study, you know, Hitler or Mussolini or Stalin or any of these characters, you look at what they did. The first thing they had to do was destroy the family, replace it with government, destroy God, replace it with government, and then kill off all the educators and the thinkers, and then get control of everything, and then put people in their places. It's really what dictators do. And it doesn't matter how big the country is, if you run your country like that, you're a dictator. And all totalitarian governments have a government under them. You know, they have, I mean, you look around the world, they still have a Senate and a House type, you know, or a parliament or whatever. And they still have elections to some degree, no matter how corrupt they are, just like they are here. But the thing is the power still resides in a handful of people's, you know, in just a handful of people. And the corruption, and here's the thing, the corruption is immense. And the more you take from people, the more you hold people down, the more crime and black market you have. And that's something that you will see more and more and more in the coming years, is you're going to have more and more violence and more crime, because people can't just go out and produce things for themselves. So society falls apart and our economy falls apart. It's going to get more violent and there's going to be more crime. And then those are just, you know, whatevers. Those are just points. And so it really, I guess the key is you got to ask yourself, are you going to hide in fear and bury yourself in your freaking entertainment, your sports and American Idol and your barbecues, or are you going to step out and claim your country back? And claiming your country back is more than just, you know, standing there with a flag and going rah, rah, rah. You have to get involved, which means you have to educate yourself, and you have to understand who are the enemy? Who are the people who are destroying my country? And you can honestly say there's people, I've heard arguments where people are on television and somebody challenges somebody and says, well, you don't really think that, you know, the president or whatever, you know, whoever's in power, some person is, you know, hates the country or is anti-patriot, and then you have to defend your position. Oh, no, I don't believe that, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You know, you have to break things to remake them. So if somebody's trying to break our country down to remake it into something else, means they don't like the country the way it is. Doesn't mean they hate the land they're on, but they have a different vision for where this country should be. And they're pushing as hard and as fast as they can. And the upcoming, you know, which you and I talk about a lot, we do our economics series, you know, the upcoming correction or crash, you know, if you want it in your face, that's coming, you know, for if you talk to some people, it's a planned event. Other people, it's just greed and corruption and we're doing the same bad mistakes, blah, blah, blah. We can make excuses all day long, but they could have fixed it. You know, and we keep making excuses for these people. That's why you don't have a big government to start with. That's why you want your power localized so that you as a citizen can go down, you know, to your state capital, your county and say, hey, I want a conversation in here. You know, we just had these idiot liberals in our county just voted that we can't have plastic bags anymore. And now you have to pay like 5 cents to get a paper bag. Well, hell, well, that many years ago, they were freaking out that we were using too many paper bags and killing all the trees. Now we're killing all the dead dinosaurs, so now we got to have paper bags again. I mean, these people are insane, Rex. You know, and they pushed this vote through. They were going to have it voted by the will of the people, and then they realized the will of the people would tell them to shove it up their hind end, so then they changed it at the last minute and pushed it through the county council. I mean, they're insane, but at least at a local level, you have the ability to get in there and you know, go to a meeting and say, hey, listen, idiot, you know, I know where you live. And when it's all centralized behind walls, you know, in the Imperial City with all the military and all the bombs and missiles and missile defense systems, you can't just go knock on his door going, listen, asshole, you're screwing up my freaking life.
Well, I could.
You know, they're so far removed from you. And that's one of the reasons the founding fathers put this country together the way they did. Go ahead.
I wish they were that far removed from me. These pricks are all over the place here, and they've infested the greater Washington, D.C. area so that Northern Virginia is no longer really part of the Commonwealth. It's part of Washington, D.C., there's a bunch of people from all over the planet coming here to suck on the big government titty. That's the D.C. economy. And they all live here, right, where every restaurant, every high-priced restaurant, we're the number one market now for caviar, lobster, and champagne. We have more luxury cars sold here than in certain counties in Los Angeles or even Westchester in New York. 16 of the top 20 wealthiest zip codes in the entire country are around the Imperial City. Why do you think that is? Because when they consolidate power, they consolidate wealth. You know, it's very simple. I guarantee you that there's more lawyers on the road and more BMWs per capita in the D.C. Beltway than there is anywhere else in the universe. And you know, I mean, well, do you know how to tell the difference between a BMW and a porcupine, Chris?
No.
Porcupine has the pricks on the outside. So this area is full of these banker types, these K Street types, these lawyer types, and they're all sucking on the big trough that is being fed by the growth and expansion of government while the rest of the country is bleeding out. They're telling you that it's a 6% unemployment rate. Bullshit. One out of four Americans doesn't have a job. Okay, they're telling you that inflation is only around 2%. Bullshit. Go to the store. Look at what you're already paying there. And when you measure inflation as a function of the quantity of the money supply, inflation is closer to 15 or 20%. You haven't seen it hit yet because we've exported most of it. But like Chris always says, some people overseas are getting sick and tired of us exporting that inflation, and it's going to come back here. And it's not going to be pretty. And the only way you can stop it is start correcting your economic malfeasance now. It means doing drastic things, which people just can't fathom, even though that's the way it was built in the first place, like not tinkering around the edges with the IRS's emails, not thinking about, well, should the rate be 39.6 or 37.2? How about getting rid of the IRS? Wipe it out. End the Fed. Now, you can't do these things overnight, but guess what? Our economic future operates on the futures market. Oil prices are on the futures market. Currencies are on the futures market. The stocks are on the futures market, which means that when people anticipate what's going to happen, they're going to invest accordingly. So if you have a five-year plan, even, to phase out the Fed and the IRS, that sends a signal. Look at the signal that the so-called Patient Protection and Affordable Care Scheme sent to the market for the last 4 years. It's not even fully done yet. And yes, the Supreme Court just struck down a portion of it. But that doesn't change the fact that it signaled to employers that things are just completely up in arms and completely arbitrary, and it screwed up the economy. You can send signals to the market that we've reclaimed a sense of sanity. And don't put all this power merely in the hands of your elected idiots. You get people in there who have the balls to stand up, people like Cruz and Rand Paul and Lee and Gowdy and Gohmert and Amash, all right? And when you wipe out the IRS, you make sure it stays wiped out. When you end the Fed, you make sure it stays out, not that some future Congress can dick around and put it back in place. Remember that Hamilton tried to put a central bank in because he worked for the banking interests before the founding of the Republic. Then we got the bus one, and its charter was revoked. Then we got the bus two, and its charter was revoked. Then we got the Federal Reserve, and now there isn't anybody alive in this country that knows what the world looks like without a Federal Reserve. So people get scared of, quote, the unknown. Well, it's not unknown. We know how it really works because it's been done before. Oh, well, it's just some interconnected global, blah, bull, 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 bull. It can still work if you understand how economics works. But they're all embroiled in this Keynesian mindset, this socialist mindset. It's because they're afraid. See, there's two kinds of people in the world. There's those people who want to live an upright life, ordered to the purpose of human existence, who have the courage to live a good life. And then there's the mealy-mouthed pussies and cowards who are so fucking afraid of everybody and everything that they will do anything in their power to get somebody else to put a gun in your face because they're afraid of you because they are too scared of their own shadows. And these are the kind of people who get elected to positions of power because it makes them feel important. So you want a world run by psychopaths who are afraid of you and want to put you down because you scare them because you might think on your own? Or do you want a world where it's not run by anybody, where you run your own life in coordination with people in your community as opposed to diktats from the central imperial city? It's your choice. One angle, it's not pretty at all. It can work. I mean, remember, the Nazi economy worked for a while. Soviet economy worked for a while. It can work. But is it life? Is it worth it? Is it fulfilling? I mean, even if it works efficiently and they manage to get you food and give you a mediocre job with a minimum wage and some free recreation time, you know, as long as you're sleeping around or playing barbecues and ball games and not really doing anything important, they'll let you be free. But is that life? Is that worth it? Is that fulfilling? You really want to spend your day dicking along with video games instead of having a real life? I mean, just think about that. It's not a joke. It's serious because that's the kind of world we're heading into, and we'll be responsible for giving that to our kids. It's disgusting when we are supposed to be the freest country that's ever been on the face of the planet. I actually put this on my page, and I'll read it real quick just because I think it puts things in perspective because you mentioned something, Chris. You said that, you know, I get accused of being, you know, statist by the libertarians and being a fascist by the liberals, and then, you know, Republicans think I'm a liberal progressive. It's just it's nuts, but it happens. But the thing is just people just don't have a notion of what freedom is. And they just take their talking points from their favorite place, whether it's MSLSD or Fox Noise, whether it's Rush or Rachel Maddow, whatever. They just take their favorite talking points and they repeat them without thinking deeper. And it's really pathetic, because if you're going to be free, you're going to have to think a little bit.
We're a surface society.
That's exactly what it is. That's a great call, surface society. Well, what I wrote was, tyrannical governments all provide freedom so long as you do that which they happen to have no problem with you doing. Conformists tend to never notice usurpation of freedom because they have yet to encounter friction with the state. This tends to blind them to the nature of power because it appears to be in their favor. Without an appeal to principle and the aptitude to see the wider implications, confirmation bias kicks in. This leads to a belief that one is in the majority, and moreover, the right majority, because freedom is seen as nothing more than your own freedom to do that which the government allows, which happens to be what you want to do, and then impute that to everyone else because individuation is irrelevant since every individual has a, quote, right to be just like you. And, of course, if they aren't, then the government takes care of that nuisance for you. In other words, you think you're free because the assholes in the government happen to agree with you on what your life should look like. So you think they're leaving me alone to be free when you're doing what they want you to do. But you've given them power. And when the tides shift in another direction, suddenly you might find that maybe you're not as free as you thought. And this is the problem in this country. As long as we have a conservative, Christian, Republican president who's blowing up the world and killing Muslims and everybody else, conservatives are happy. And the liberals are screaming about a police state. And then when you get a progressive liberal who's expanding the welfare state, even if he's blowing everything up just like the Republican guy, suddenly they're happy. And the Republicans are screaming that we're being taken over and our liberties are going. Nothing has changed except the team in power. That's the stupidity of the whole thing. That's the stupidity of the whole thing.
Oh, my God.
I don't know, man. We got 15 minutes left, so... Go ahead.
You nailed it, because it was just amazing to me. You know, when I was when 9/11 happened, I was in the middle of family tragedy and stuff like that, and wasn't paying much attention to much. And then next thing you know, we were in wars, and my son signs up and heads off to war, And it kind of wasn't until a couple years later that I finally got my life settled again and really started, listening and digging. And then Bush leaves and McCain hands the presidency over, and the Republicans screwed up so bad they gave, the House, the Senate, and the presidency to the commies or the liberals. And then everybody starts screaming and hollering and screaming and hollering. And I was just like going, you don't get it. You Republicans just don't get it. You refuse to admit. And I can always tell somebody who is really wants to fix the problem, because they're not easy on Bush. And thank God there's a handful of people out there that are in a Republican Party who don't play that apologetic game. Because if you don't get real about your side and the crime and the corruption and the abuse of power and the abuse of economics in this country by that Bush era for that 6 years when they had total control, then nothing changes, because you're just going to keep voting the same assholes right back in power. And that is I think in my life was a clarifying point where I did enough research, got my head on straight, and said, this is where I typically would vote. And not that I'm a party member, because I've never been a member of anything. I'm not a membership type person. But that would be where most of my belief structure and voting would gravitate to. But after I really seriously looked at, everything that came out of, 6 years of total Republican control, I was disgusted. And then when I started researching and I got deep into the whole neocon thing and what it really means and who these people really are and the whole American New Century and all that crap, then I got really disgusted. And, it's kind of like you've got to do enough research to where you finally quit being a drone for your party, where you start being a citizen and start setting back and saying, wow, this really sucks, and these people are really evil on both sides, and they both suck, and they both have increased the size of government and the debt. I mean, it was a Republican took us off the gold standard. Wake the hell up. You know, who in the hell gave us But, you know, I mean, if you search back every major, you know, the ABC departments, all these unconstitutional power departments that write, you know, over 3,000 laws a year outside of Congress, and you trace them back. Yeah, Carter gave us the Department of Energy, but then, you know, you go to Nixon, he gave us this, and then back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. They're all unconstitutional. They're all beyond the powers that they're supposed to have. Both presidents on both sides have abused the Constitution, Republicans and Democrats. And both of them have abused sound economics, period. I mean, since forever. So you have to sit down and say, okay, that goes back to what I was saying earlier. What do you believe in? Who are you? You don't tell me you're a freaking, you know, conservative. You know, you need to find out what a conservative means and make sure you fit that profile, because you may be another neocon Republican like the rest of them that jumps up and down every time, you know, Hannity points a finger over there and goes, there's the enemy, we got to go get him. Yeah, let's go. I'm ready to sign up right now and go kill some people. That's not a freaking conservative. And if you think that is, then you have a big misconception. You know, and all these people who love to quote Reagan, you know, and have you ever studied Reagan's concepts of just war and how and his policies on that stuff? These Republicans, man, they can't wait. They said nothing when Obama blew up Libya. Nothing. You know, they said nothing when Obama funded the moderate rebels in Syria that have now become ISIS or IS. You know, nothing. Why? Because they're just as much for all these frickin' wars as anybody else, because look at who their donors are. The majority of the strength of the Republican Party is the war industry. Very prosperous companies. You know, and big energy. You know, everybody talks about, yeah, we're getting ready for an energy renaissance in this country. Let me tell you something. We're not going to be energy independent. You know why? They're already changing the laws for export, because these companies can make a freaking hell of a lot more money. They've got you paying $4 a gallon for gas, and nobody's bitching anymore. We're programmed, Rex. So, hell, they want to export this shit to Asia, to the markets that are actually growing, you know? And so they're gonna ship this shit off, and you're going to pay for it because it's more profitable over there. They've already got you bent over. Your fuel prices are up, your energy costs are up, and you're accepting it, and you're voting the same bastards right back into power who have done this to the country and are currently doing it to it. You know? And so it's going to be here. And you go, and you think you're a conservative? No. Not if you support these people. You know, you're going to bitch and moan and bitch and moan about pipelines, about Keystone, about this, about that, about the other, and you're going to watch your energy go right overseas, and we're going to still import from Saudi and the rest of these bastards who support, number one supporters of terrorism in the Middle East. And that's our allies. Hallelujah. Isn't that a wonderful freaking deal? I mean, people got to do some research. You know,
that's
spend
horrible.
All of your time bitching about Iran and looking who
that's
the hell Saudi is. And look
that
who Saudi
like
is. Well, I guess slavery doesn't require much work. You just obey.
That's easier. Yeah, just tell me what to think.
I mean, you think you get it. Let's say you got a Jeb Bush in there and you had the House and Senate in the same position of power that it is right now. What the hell do you think is going to change in this country? Seriously.
Rex would move to New Zealand?
Yeah. South Island, baby. South Island.
No, you're absolutely right. But, you know, it's hard. Being free is not easy. It requires work. Oh, poor you.
You
got to
shut off
by the way,
frickin' TV and do some research?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Throw it out the window. Listen to the radio instead. And only
only Liberty's Thunder. It's the only thing on radio. That's all you should ever listen to. Get that through your head. And if you want different views on anything, you go to Chris's group on Facebook, Liberty's Talk. He's got research from all over the place. So Liberty's Talk on Facebook, that's very, very important. There's about 9 minutes left for those of you that are listening live. And if you want to continue to listen live, you have to call in and listen on your handset because the cheap shoestring technology we use is going to cut you off in 8 minutes. That number is 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. And if you'd like to say something in the next few minutes, just push 1 on your handset and we'll bring you on. I think Chris made some very important points, and I think you really should listen to it and remember something. We appreciate you sharing the show to get people to come listen live, and a bunch of you are listening live, but you can always share the show after you heard it because maybe you agree with us. Maybe you agree with most of what we say. Maybe you see things somewhat the way that we do. Maybe your friends don't. Maybe this is a good way to introduce them to thinking outside the box because it's very simple. Everybody thinks they've got the answer, right? You got your ANCAP saying, oh, all government is bad, the state is bad, and we should all be in voluntary communities. Good luck with that. It's called Somalia. It doesn't really work out too well. Then you've got your other, you know, libertarian minarchists who are like, well, you know, it's all about freedom. Everybody gets to choose whatever they want freedom to be. And, you know, the top three items on my agenda are sodomy, pot, and I don't know, bring fish back, you know, whatever. It's nonsensical. Of course, the liberals, it's all about this made-up problem with the weather, and, you know, raising the minimum wage because that can't possibly screw up the economy. And, you know, I don't know what their other thing is, getting rid of coal, right? And for the Republicans, it's like we've got to kill every enemy of the United States wherever we find them with all the weaponry that we have. And we want lower taxes, but only slightly less than what the Democrats want. And we want smaller government. And by that we mean that we won't grow it as much as they will, but we want it bigger. These are not answers. These are talking points fed to you by your controllers, and instead of finding points of agreement, we just repeat these things and repeat them and repeat them. See, the thing about freedom, the thing about liberty is you can try all of your cockamamie schemes in your state, in your county. If your ideas are so frigging good, the rest of us will go, wow, they raised their minimum wage to $350 an hour, and look at their prosperity. How can we emulate that? Or, oh, my goodness, look at Massachusetts. They did this universal health care thing, and everybody there is healthier and younger and better looking than anywhere else in the country. We've got to copy that. Or we look over to the other place and like, oh, my God, look at this libertarian paradise. Everybody's a sodomite pot-smoking with bitch tits. It's fantastic. I want to copy that. You see, that's the thing about liberty, is you can try your cockamamie ideas, and the rest of us will laugh at you when they fail, and we will copy you when you succeed. But when you put everything in the hands of a few pricks in Washington, D.C., you can't tell what fails and what succeeds because it's always their stupid ideas equally applied everywhere. And they're trying to do it now through the neocon impulse equally everywhere across the planet. There's no comparison. There's no competition. There's no marketplace of ideas. Now, does that mean that the libertarian ideas and the conservative ideas are always right, that the liberals have nothing to offer? No. There are probably some areas where things are a little murky, but that's why freedom works. Because we can experiment and compare and contrast. But you see, when you got your idea so far up your ass that you want everybody to be just like you, you have to force it on them because you know what? Some of us might resist. Some of us might have a different notion. And that's why we have a federated system of diffused power. But you don't understand that. Of course, if you listen to the show, you do. But I'm talking about your other friends who identify as libertarian, liberal, progressive, Republican, Democrat, whatever. They don't understand that. Because they're so married to what they've been told is their ideology that they can't break out of the box. And it's all about equality. Everybody has to be equal. Really? Because we're not equal. We're different. Some of us have penises. Some of us don't. The First Lady might. That's besides the point. The issue is that we're different. And different people look at things in different ways. And you have to realize that equality means equal before the law, equal access to justice, not equal access to stuff, not equal talent, not equal lifestyle. It's not all the same. We're different. We're individuals. And Alexis de Tocqueville, who was mentioned at the opening credits, and I've talked about this on the show before, mentioned this. When he came to visit in the 1830s, he said, having thus taken each citizen in turn in its powerful grasp and shaped him to its will, government then extends its embrace to include the whole of society. It does not break men's wills, but softens, bends, and guides it. It seldom enjoins, but often inhibits action. It does not destroy anything, but prevents much from being born. It is not at all tyrannical, but it hinders, restrains, enervates, stifles, and stultifies so much that in the end, each nation is no more than a flock of timid and hardworking animals with a government as its shepherd. Is that the future that you want for your children? Or do you want them to be free, which means that you give them the power to make mistakes, but you don't institutionalize, codify, and mandate those friggin' mistakes? All right, we're 3 minutes from the top of the hour. I got a 15-minute clip with a little bit of Ronald Reagan in there, but we'll try to close this out soon. Chris, you want to throw anything on top of that?
Yeah, I made it back in time. Yep. I think it's a I was a little bit skeptical coming into the show going, man, what are we going to talk about? But, you know, it's important. I think that, the idea of that shining city on the hill that Reagan talked about, that what this country was founded on and the experiment that was launched, you know, maximizing freedom, minimizing government, and giving people the ability to live their lives without the yoke of tyranny on their neck. And unfortunately, in our prosperity, we got fat, lazy, apathetic, distracted, shallow society. You know, the divorce rate started flying. Our countries internally, you can get into this whole conversation about society as a whole, and the people at the top are just playing us like fools. And people are allowing it to happen. Critical thinking is just, it's almost an illusion today. To see people get past the, I look at the primary in 2012, or late 2011, 2012, and I look at the election cycle, and I was just dumbfounded at how stupid people had become and how programmable they had become. And then I thought, well, that one will wake them up because, they put this schmuck up in there, and he lost, and Obama got power again, and then Obama started, rolling with his next series of mandates and changes that he wanted to accomplish. And I watched the Republicans whine and moan, and Fox News whine and moan, and Hannity and Rush and Levin whine and moan and whine and moan. And I'm thinking, nobody's being honest about what needs to change to save our country. Getting Obama out, even if they impeached him tomorrow, what has changed? Who has put any plan? A couple guys have. I mean, Rand's put a real economic plan out there, but nobody talks about the economy. They don't talk about, about the waste and fraud, which is over 30%. People can't even pay their damn bills, and we got, wide open borders, and they can't wait to get in the next three or four wars. They're so corrupt, they're so degenerate, they lie, every one of them. They open their mouth, they're lying. And they don't give a shit about you. And for some reason, people think they do. They think that these people are going to save them or fix things or whatever. And that's got to change. And the only way that's going to change is if people wake up. It really is. Because putting the same people back in power in 2014 that were there, through this whole cycle from Bush to Clinton to Bush to Obama, if you just keep putting these people back in power, nothing changes. Because the guys at the top, the guys have been there the longest, and they're the most embedded, corrupt jerks there are. And they have no intention of fixing anything. You think the Republicans are really going to get rid of Obamacare? If you do, you're a fool. Because they're not. Because it's not socialized medicine. It's corporatism.
And Republicans love that crap. And they love being in bed with the big businesses who give them lots of perks. You've got to get some liberty-minded people in there. And maybe they all go to hell sooner or later, you know, the longer they're in power. Maybe they all do. I don't know. But you got to get some fresh face in there. You know, that's the bottom line. Some people who are going to fight, you know, and maybe term limits is the key. I mean, I think about it all the time, you know, while they're fresh and young and they go there with the desire to change things, you know, and then they start corrupting, whatever. I mean, it just seems like a natural thing. But 30, 20, 30, 40 years, give me a freaking break. You know, we got, Cochran. I mean, come on. That guy's like 76 years old and they reelected him in the Senate? He'll be 80-some years old if he makes it. I mean, come on. You know, are you kidding me? Against a guy, a brilliant guy that ran against him, how could people be so stupid? I don't know. I don't know what's happened to people. And people need to wake up.
That particular one, it was 6,500 Democrats.
Yeah, that's like, true too. But more people.
And they're trying to repeat that. By the way, that's the problem. They're trying to repeat that same thing that happened with Cochran and McDaniel in all the rest of the primaries. That's their new
game plan.
Yeah.
It started with
Cuccinelli. Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no way in the world that guy should have lost. That guy has an impeccable record. You know, maybe some libertarians don't like him because he's, you know, right-wing Christian, whatever. But the guy fought. He was one of the first guys to launch a lawsuit against Obamacare. I mean, the guy was a butt kicker. There's no way the guy that won, he's under federal investigation. While he's running the campaign, how in the hell can that happen except people don't get off their asses and get out there and fight? That's really
pretty
what
much.
It was. Because we're not talking, Rex, we're not talking, you know, tens of thousands of people more. We're talking a few hundred to a thousand people making a difference on these smaller elections.
Yep.
You know, it's disgusting. But it is. All right, back to you.
I mean, you're,
and that's my close.
You're right. That's your close. Okay, well, we'll get out of here soon. But no, I think you're absolutely right. It's disgusting that these close races are happening, and it's not close because there's a vigorous debate of ideas between the two sides. These things are close simply because they're suppressing the turnout, and they're rigging it, or they're using less than kosher tactics to draw people. And it's happening because they're afraid. And see, this is the interesting thing to me. We complain a lot on this show. I was hoping that we'd do something a little more positive today, being July 4th weekend, but I went off the handle. It happens. But that's neither here nor there. The simple fact is that the enemy is afraid because more and more people are waking up and smelling something fishy. And some of us are doing something about it, and they don't like that. We are taking away their gravy train of power and booze and perversion and control. They don't like that. And whether you're of the mindset that, you know, there's a big puppet master somewhere out there controlling all these guys, or whether it's a community of interests or whatever, the bottom line is that they're working together in one way, shape, or form. And whether that's a conscious conspiracy or a community of interest is really irrelevant to me, because either way, you got to stop it. And the only way you stop it is you take back the power that belongs to us. You know, you can try an armed revolution if you want. It'll succeed in a couple of decades. You're not going to do it overnight. And frankly, I got to tell you, these days I'm pretty sure that most of you just don't have the stomach for it. You're soft. You're weak. And you're not going to do it. But here's the thing. You have the power within your hands, within the system, and some of us are starting to work it, and it's freaking them out. The problem is that some of us is not enough. We need more of us to work it, and the only way that happens is you wake up those who are like-minded, those who are on the alleged right, people who believe in the rule of law, in maximum freedom, in minimum government, in sound economics, in sound money, in a strong defensive foreign policy that's ready to kick butt wherever we need to be, but isn't interested in policing the whole friggin' planet. These are the things that unite us. But we spend all our time whining and bitching about the few little things that divide us, because we want to win an argument. We want our pet peeve issue to be the number one thing on the planet. Oh, my goodness, the Hobby Lobby stores are not giving 4 contraceptive abortifacients to their – it's the end of the world. Give me a break. These are not important things. What's important is that you have religious freedom. You have freedom of press. You have – I mean, 6 corporations own the media. That's not freedom of press. You have the right to free assembly. These things are there. You have a right to a jury trial. You have a right to not self-incriminate, which is impossible if you ever file a 1040. So it's a bunch of rules and regulations made by unelected bureaucrats because Congress has abdicated their power to a bank and to K Street lobbyists. That's what you have to end. And the only way that ends, and the only time they ever respond, is when you scare the shit out of them by standing up. Look at what happened when Jihad Jane Muhammad and the jihadi in the White House wanted to topple the last secular Arab regime by bombing the crap out of Syria on behalf of al-Qaeda. From left to right, and everywhere in between, Americans said no, and they had to back off that plan. So what did they do? They armed and trained those guys, the very same guys that they were going to send our military to be the Air Force for, and even our military people are like, I didn't sign on to be al-Qaeda's Air Force. And now those guys are the ISIS or the IS or the ISIL or whatever the fuck the caliphate is called, but that's who they are. And now we got to go do something about it. No boots on the ground. Well, except the 300 I'm sending. No arms and money. Well, except the arms and money I'm sending. 800 now. Okay, so just keep growing. This is just like Vietnam. Put a couple of advisors on the ground, and then before you know it, it's a full-scale war. So, but look what you did before. You stopped it from happening in Syria. Now you're quiet. Because it's Iraq. We are invested in Iraq. Why? Why do we care? They got to work out their own problems. They've been at each other's throats for 14 centuries. You're not going to stop them from doing it. Well, because if we don't kill them over there, they'll come over here and kill us. Yeah, you know what? Muslims tend to do that. Muslim jihadis tend to do that. I hate to break it to you, but even 9/11, as horrible as that was not that devastating. It was not a military success. It was a psychological success. So you still have a higher chance of being struck by lightning or killed by a cop in your own country than being killed by a terrorist. So don't forget about things that really are not that much of a problem. And frankly, terrorists are a little kind of weak. You know, if you stand up to them by not cowering in fear and letting the TSA play with your genitals at the airport or give up control of your cell phone and all this stuff because of the terrorists, they tend to be like, well, we're not instilling terror in these people. Why are we bothering? We'll have to find some other tactic. But you see, you're afraid. You get scared. You give the government more power, and they go, oh, this is working for us. So it's up to you to realize that the enemy is weak and that we can make the move if we stop bickering, if we find those 3, 4, 5 things upon which we agree. How about not being the policeman of the world? I think we agree on that. That doesn't mean we're isolationists or we're going to give up our military. It just means we're not going to try to police every single problem that happens everywhere on the planet. It can't be done. 2, how about sound money? I mean, if you don't think inflation is a problem, you like that there's a private central bank that controls the quantity of money, you're probably not conservative or libertarian, and that's just too bad. You're on the other side. Go away. But for the rest of us, how about sound money? We can agree on that. You know, how about obey the law. If we have a law, just because you happen to be an elected dickhead doesn't mean you get to ignore the law. How about non-militarized police? I mean, I'm not saying there isn't room for militarized police. Certain actions will require that. But you see, the thing about SWAT teams, special weapons and tactics teams, is they're only supposed to be used in an imminent and ongoing problem. They're not supposed to be issuing warrants. They're not supposed to be breaking into people's houses and shooting their dogs. They're not supposed to be pulling you over on the street. They're not supposed to be patrolling a tank in your neighborhood. They have very limited use, hostage situations, terrorist attacks, that sort of thing. But they're not supposed to be used as the regular day-to-day law enforcement. So how about we work on that? If you work on just those things, you'll find that you'll get most Americans to agree with you. And then you tell them, help me fix the problem. You know your local races. I don't, but I can tell you that we got primaries coming up. In the Virgin Islands, it's very important. I want everybody to work on the Virgin Islands primary August 2nd. No, August 5th, Kansas, Michigan, Missouri, Washington. August 7th, Tennessee. August 9th, Hawaii. August 12th, Connecticut, Minnesota, Wisconsin. August 19th, Alaska, Wyoming. There's stuff going on, and you're not going to win every race, but you can save Justin Amash. He's a good voice. He's one of the good guys, and he's young. Get him in there. You got Joe Miller in Alaska. Get him in there. All right, your car. So you focus on the things you what can I do, Rex? Well, if you got money, send it to the candidate. If you don't have money, you got some time. Make some calls on his behalf. But do something, because it's important. And the most important thing you can do is get people to participate in the process, not just a week before the election. Make it happen. I mean, it really is up to you, but you can make it happen. And don't let them make you fear their politically correct nonsense or, the Republicans have no chance if they don't do immigration reform. I hate to tell this to you, but immigrants don't vote legally. And I'm talking about immigrants, not the illegal aliens. I'm talking about immigrants who come in through the front door today. They don't vote legally until they're citizens several years from now. You're not going to grow your base by appealing to, quote, immigrants. You're going to grow your base by appealing to liberty. That's how it works. And, you know, oh, well, that just doesn't seem right, Rex. You seem to be like you're against people who don't have your ethnicity. Well, that's not the issue. The issue is it's not about ethnicity. It's about liberty. Liberty transcends all of that stuff. That's what you have to work on. And actually, a foreigner, G.K. Chesterton, who's a Britishman, came over here, and he said, the Americans are very patriotic and wish to make their new citizens patriotic Americans. But is the idea of making a new nation literally out of an old nation that comes along? In a word, that is unique. What is unique is not America, but what is called Americanization. We understand nothing till we understand the amazing ambition to Americanize whatever, some other people. We are not trying to Anglicize thousands of French cooks or Italian organ grinders. France is not trying to Gallicize thousands of English trippers or German prisoners of war. America is the only place in the world where this process is going on. And the process, as I pointed out, is not internationalization. It would be truer to say it is the nationalization of the internationalized. It is making a home out of vagabonds and the nation out of exiles. That's the uniqueness of the American experiment. We attract the best and the brightest from the world to come here because we put out a beacon for liberty. And it doesn't care what your color is or your gender or even what your private sexual proclivities are that you don't advertise to the world. It doesn't care. The only thing liberty holds out is figure out who you are supposed to be. Figure out what the purpose of your life is supposed to be and go make it happen. That is the most attractive thing that a nation can put out. And that's what we used to do. And that's a good thing. And we have to get back to that and convince those who live here who think somehow we're one amongst many in a global community of federated structure, blah, blah, blah. Screw that. We are not one among many. I don't want to be like Nigeria. I don't want to be like Zimbabwe. I don't want to be like Nepal. I don't want to be like Ukraine. I don't want to be like Great Britain or France. We are America. And that means that we stand on the principles that are enshrined in that document written 238 years ago, that we are entitled by nature's God to have these unalienable rights to life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness, and that we put together a government to secure those rights, not to feed us, not to wipe our asses, not to tell us what we can do for a living or how we can pray, but simply to protect those rights from enemies, foreign and domestic. That's what America is. That's what the American creed is. It's liberty, and it unites us. It does not divide us. What divides us is when we say, my idea of liberty, which includes the minimum wage and controlling the weather and driving little toy cars around, is the only one that matters. Or my notion of liberty, everybody must have access to medical marijuana and be able to wear tie-dye shirts. Or my notion of liberty, everybody has a right to pray, and therefore every morning at 10 a.m., everybody must pray these particular prayers from the Bible. See, that doesn't work. And it doesn't matter if you agree with any of those things, some of those things or none of those things. You don't get to impose them on other people. You persuade them. That's your right, free speech, free association. But you don't use the government gun to force people to live that way. That's how it's done almost everywhere else to one degree or another, and that is the road we are going down. And if we don't stop and turn back, the only progress we're going to make is progress off the cliff and into European socialized balkanization. And that ain't going to be pretty. You're not going to like it. I don't care who you are. But you can do something about it. Teach people. Get involved. It's not just about voting. It's about our civil institutions. It's about what we carry in our hearts. It's about how we treat each other. And then we can hold the politicians accountable and replace them with statesmen. We'll broadcast sometime this week, but we're not sure when yet. In the meantime, happy Independence Day weekend. And the future can be brighter if you work hard for it. This is Rex and Trog, signing off.
Exciting revolution ever known to humankind began with three simple words: we the people. The revolutionary notion that the people grant government its rights and not the other way around.
I've always believed that this land was set aside in an uncommon way, that a divine plan placed this great continent between the oceans to be found by a people from every corner of the earth who had a special love of faith, freedom, and peace. Let us reaffirm America's destiny of goodness and goodwill.
The story of America is one of people who have made their dreams come true by realizing that the time for action is always now. It began with 13 colonies and their battle for independence, and then westward expansion, an industrial revolution, the building of a great nation, and finally America's ascendance on the world stage. At every point, the time was now. A general falls to his knees in the hard snow of Valley Forge. A lonely president paces the darkened halls and ponders his struggle to preserve the Union. The men of the Alamo call out encouragement to each other. A settler pushes west and sings a song, and the song echoes out forever and fills the unknowing air. It is the American sound. It is hopeful, big-hearted, idealistic, daring, decent, and fair. That's our heritage. That's our song. We sing it still. For all our problems, our differences, we are together as of old. We raise our voices to the God who is the author of this most tender music. And may he continue to hold us close as we fill the world with our sound in unity, affection, and love. One people, under God, dedicated to the dream of freedom that he has placed in the human heart, called upon now to pass that dream on to a waiting and a hopeful world. We didn't seek this leadership.
It was thrust upon us. In the dark days after World War II, when much of the civilized world lay in ruins, Pope Pius XII said, "The American people have a genius for splendid and unselfish action. And into the hands of America, God has placed the destinies of afflicted humanity." Our great American hero, Abraham Lincoln, put it in political perspective for us. No man is good enough to govern another man without that other's consent. We both value the right to have a government of our own choosing. We expect government to serve the people. We do not expect the people to serve government. America was founded by people who believed that God was their rock of safety. He is ours. I recognize we must be cautious in claiming that God is on our side, but I think it's all right to keep asking if we're on his side. We survived, when I was a young man, a Great Depression, a worldwide depression that toppled governments in many parts of the world, but not ours. We came back from Pearl Harbor to win the greatest military victory in the history of the world. And in a single lifetime, my lifetime, we have gone from the horse and buggy to landing astronauts on the moon. As a people, we have fought harder, paid a higher price, done more to advance the freedom and dignity of man than any other people on earth. Ours is the land of the free because it's the home of the brave. What kind of people will we be 40 years from today? May we answer, free people, worthy of freedom, and firm in the conviction that freedom is not the sole prerogative of a chosen few, but the universal right of all God's children. This is the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, set forth in 1948, and this is the affirming flame the United States has held high to a watching world. We champion freedom not only because it is practical and beneficial, but because it is morally right and just. America, the world's brightest jewel of hope and adventure. Our country is the keeper of the dreams that nourish the soul and spark fire in our breast. The dream we share is a great dream, perhaps the greatest dream in all history. It's a dream of broad and an open land that offers opportunity to all. It's a dream of a magnificent country that represents a force for peace and goodwill among nations. All of us have been laboring in the name of that dream. Today, let us rededicate ourselves to that great work. Yes, we'll suffer setbacks, and yes, others will do all they can to place obstacles in our path. But if we have the courage to do all that we can to make our dream come true, then we will achieve great good in this world, and we'll do our duty to our fellow men, to our beloved country, and to our God. For us, faith, work, family, neighborhood, freedom, and peace are not just words. They're expressions of what America means, definitions of what makes us a good and loving people. How can we not believe in the greatness of America? How can we not do what is right and needed to preserve this last best hope of man on earth? After all our struggles to restore America, to revive confidence in our country, hope for our future, after all our hard-won victories earned through the patience and courage of every citizen, we cannot, must not, and will not turn back. We will finish our job. How could we do less? We're Americans. People tell me that I became president on January 20th, 1981. I feel I have to correct them. You don't become president of the United States. You are given temporary custody of an institution called the presidency, which belongs to our people. Freedom is the recognition that no single person, no single authority or government has a monopoly on the truth, but that every individual life
is infinitely precious, that every one of us put on this world has been put there for a reason and has something to offer. I received a letter not long ago from a man who said, you can go to Japan to live, but you cannot become Japanese. You can go to France, and you live and not become a Frenchman. You can go to live in Germany or Turkey, and you won't become a German or a Turk. But then he added, anybody from any corner of the world can come to America to live and become an American. We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us. We the people are the driver. The government is the car. And we decide where it should go and by what route and how fast. Almost all the world's constitutions are documents in which governments tell the people what their privileges are. Our Constitution is a document in which we, the people, tell the government what it is allowed to do. We, the people, are free. All great change in America begins at the dinner table. So tomorrow night in the kitchen, I hope the talking begins. And children, if your parents haven't been teaching you what it means to be an American, let them know and nail them on it. That would be a very American thing to do. It means, too, that the young Americans I spoke of 7 years ago, as well as those who might be coming along the Virginia or Maryland shores this night and seeing for the first time the lights of this capital city, the lights that cast their glow on our great halls of government and the monuments to the memory of our great men, it means those young Americans will find a city of hope in a land that is free. We can be proud that for them and for us, those lights along the Potomac are still seen this night, signaling as they have for nearly two centuries, and as we pray God they always will, that another generation of Americans has protected and passed on lovingly this place called America, this shining city on a hill, this government of, by, and for the people.
Imagine a time when the White House is once again occupied by a friend of liberty. And you may think I'm talking about electing Republicans. I'm not. I'm talking about electing lovers of liberty.
Still the free. agenda.